GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Hello and welcome to the Hurling Show once more. My name is Shane Stapleton. You can catch us every Friday here at 12:30. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, wherever you like to get it. Go to offtheball.com as well. And if there's a place where you can review us, give us 5 stars. Sure, why wouldn't you? This week, joined again by Michael Verney, ex-Offaly hurler, and of course, Irish Independent writer. How are you doing, Michael?
Good, Shane. Good, yeah.
And Dave McIntyre, who of course commentated on Cork against Limerick last weekend for Sky. Straight to it, Dave. Like, how exciting is it to commentate on a game like that? And how hard of a job is it to do?
It's an incredible experience. So that was the second half. Was up with the best halves of hurling I've ever commentated on. It was just phenomenal. And it's just, you don't really get a chance to think about how easy or difficult it might be because you don't really think about anything. Like, you've no idea what's coming out of your mouth because it's just so quick. It's there's nothing measured about it. It just flows, and then the full-time whistle goes and you just take a massive breath and you just think, Jesus.
I'd say you slept well, did you?
Yeah, it was amazing. And it was incredible fun. And the quality of the hurling was brilliant. I mean, I've seen 2 draws now in this year's championship already. I was at Inverness for the Tip Cork game as well, and I've just been treated each of the last 3 weekends to an absolute belter because I was at the Gaelic grounds for the Limerick Tip match as well. So it just seems to be getting better every week. But Saturday night was as much fun as I've had in the commentary box in a long time. It was great.
I say this as the one Munster man in the room against 2 Leinster men. Munster is the best league in the world, lads. Any sport.
It is right now. I mean, the GAA have fallen on their feet with how equal the playing field is in Munster right now. You've got 5 teams and really control blanket over the 5 of them. If this was put in place 2 years ago, Tip were probably hammering everybody and the rest are trying to fight for the middle ground with Limerick behind everyone. And it's just unfortunate from a Leinster point of view that they started with this round robin series and you've got the best team in the country probably by distance and the worst team of the top tier counties as well in Offaly. So, you know, it swings around a bit. It might change in a year or two.
I tell you what though, Galway are sitting pretty. The Munster boys absolutely taking lumps out of each other every week, you know, these attritional games where guys are absolutely pushing themselves to the brink and they're on the other side there and they don't look like they've got now a second gear yet. And I think it's definitely playing into their hands even more that they haven't really had a hard game yet.
But if you had any of the Munster teams taking on Wexford at the moment, like, Wexford aren't a soft touch. I don't think that they're an All-Ireland challenger, nor do I think they'll be next year either. Could be proven wrong. But you know, a couple of the teams in there, Dublin went very close against Kilkenny as well. Offaly are obviously the bogey team there at the moment. But other than that, is it because Galway are so good or because, you know, like, do you actually think that the Leinster quality is bad?
No, I don't necessarily think the Leinster quality is bad. I just think it's maybe, obviously they haven't done as much as them, but it's kind of like what Kilkenny were 8 or 9 years ago. They just seem to be a step above. They seem to have an unbelievable pick, particularly in the forwards, where different guys are popping up. Conor Cooney, it's, you know, stupid scores most days, but Joseph Cooney hits 1-4 one day, mightn't do anything the next day. Conor Whelan picks up the slack the next day, and the bench with Flynn and Niall Burke and these guys come in. I just think they're a step ahead, and I just think it's really playing into their hands. They've hardly had a hard game yet this year, and they still look in a phenomenal position physically and everywhere, really.
Mm. I do feel if they had been in the Munster Championship this year that they would have got a couple of really stiff tests.
Who, Galway?
You know, if for example 3 weeks ago this Limerick team were laying into Galway, I think you would get a brilliant game of hurling.
Yeah, I think Limerick are actually, as things stand, number 2 in the pecking order. They're the most Galway-like team outside of Galway. But just, Michael, you've walked in here as an absolute disgrace. There's no two ways about it. You're wearing a pair of shorts, you're wearing a pair of t-shirts. I don't know if you want to show off the pins there, but
no, I'm okay.
It's where you came in off Dolly Mount Strand there or something like that.
Who says I didn't?
Maybe you did. But during the week as well, you were showing off those fine pins and that fine Offaly hoop as well. So I think we have a little video here. You know, you were playing a bit of snooker. I'd be a big fan myself. Can you talk us through this? What were you doing there?
Yeah, that was
look at
doing Offaly
pins.
Proud. Jesus Christ. Ken Doherty and Steve Davis were at an exhibition in Burr and there was a raffle at half time, and it's kind of like the Father Ted story.
Yeah.
You know, the last raffle I was at, it turned out the people who organised the raffle ended up winning the raffle. So it's not unusual for that to happen from time to time. But I ended up getting pulled out, and you could pick a frame with either Doherty or Davis. So I said, like, probably the 2nd or 3rd best snooker player of all time. and I graced the bays with him. So yeah, it was good fun.
We were with Davis, and did you give him lots of it?
I tell you what, the score at one stage was, I think it was 55-8. I had potted 8 single reds. I could not get, for love nor money, I could not get a colour with them. But I still potted a few balls. It's a good crack now, yeah.
I spent €200 on a cue last week.
I did that about 4 or 5 years ago, yeah.
Jesus. Yeah.
Serious
what
players
here.
It's an investment. It's more of an image thing. Oh, you walk into the club with your own cue and you think you're a big shot, you know. You're not necessarily out. It doesn't mean you are. Yeah.
You know, real arrogance. But anyway.
Too much time in your hands, lads.
Yeah, that's that. So we're going to review the Watford against Tipperary game, and Jamesy O'Connor was speaking to Oisín Langan just after last Sunday's draw.
We saw a bit of everything in this game, didn't we?
Unbelievable, Oisín. Yeah, and it's a pity, but it's a controversy. This may be going to hog the headlines tomorrow morning because there were some, you know, fantastic hurling play from both sides. Tip dead and buried. 10 points down. Looked no way back for them. They were struggling, but you know the first goal gave them a real lifeline, and the second goal obviously is will create the headlines tomorrow morning. I mean, to me at the time, it didn't look like it was over the line. And the umpire made a huge call, and my sympathy, I suppose, is with the referee. He has to trust his officials, and it's just a pity, I suppose, that you know it's what's going to dominate the headings, and Watford are very right to feel aggrieved with that decision.
That said, I put it to Derek McGrath that when you're 10, 11 points up midway through the second half of a match, you should win it. And he said, you're absolutely right, and we'll have to look at that. How did they not win this game?
I suppose they went 15 minutes without a score, I think, in the second half. They couldn't buy a score. Tip had all the momentum. Brendan Maher was outstanding, I think, in the tip half backline. Pádraig Maher finally started to impose his will and get involved in the play. Cathal Barrett made a difference. Bonner made a huge impact when he came on. And, you know, Watford was just took maybe one or two little wrong options, just couldn't get the ball probably to the shooters in the right areas. But when Pádraig Mahoney got that fantastic score, you know, it seemed to steady the ship. You know, Jake didn't put them, I think, too clear, and you think they're going to see it out from here. But I suppose, look, credit to Tip, they kept finding a way, I suppose, to keep themselves in the match.
I say this as a Tipperary man. That goal, that free from Jason Ford that Gleeson caught and brought back over the line, clearly a goal. Clearly, Dave, come on, you've seen the replay.
Yeah, there's no argument.
Incontrovertible evidence.
There's no argument, it was definitely a goal. I don't know what people have been whinging about all week.
I'm the same. What did you make of that? Like, would you hammer the umpire, or would you say he made a mistake? Like, he was really sure that it was a goal. He made a mistake, but like, you have to go with your instinct, or do you hammer him and say, "Come on, man"?
It's such a strange one because the other umpire was like looking, and he basically kind of went like that, and just as if to say, "Play on, like, or whatever." And it was amazing to see that when Alan Kelly went in, that the other umpire, not the guy who made the decision, but the guy on the other side,
didn't want to know.
He didn't communicate with them at all that he didn't think it was a goal. And it's so strange because if the goal had been given and they hadn't had a confab or whatever and talked about it, you'd say, well, like, Kelly should have went in and talked. But they did go in and talk and they had a chance to rectify it. And fair enough, it would have been a big thing to overrule the goal. But everyone would have been like, oh, that, fair enough. Nobody actually thought it was a goal. But I think Brendan Cummins mentioned in the Sunday game after, the kind of smug look on the umpire at the end of the game was a bit strange, I thought, too. I don't think it added to it. Yeah. If that was me, I would have been trying to get out of there as quick as possible.
But, I'd say he was just perplexed, and I don't know if he was intentionally smug. What do you think, Dave?
I don't think anyone would intentionally react that way. I think it was just an involuntary movement that he was shell-shocked. He probably realised walking off the field that he had found himself in the midst of a bit of a cauldron and that was only going to get worse in the hours after the game. And he did try and get from the field as quickly as he could. I think the smirk was... I think it was almost involuntary. When looking at it the first time, my immediate reaction was that all the blame went to the umpire who raised the green flag. But watching another Sunday game then, I think his mate on the other side, on the other post, is equally to blame because he, as you said, didn't want to know. You had one umpire, I think I put it up on Twitter, one umpire was desperate to get involved, the other umpire wanted absolutely no involvement in the incident whatsoever. And the referee does go in and give them an opportunity to speak to each other and maybe come up with the right call. Like, there were three opportunities to come up with the right call, and all three were lost. And that's really what's the most annoying part of that situation.
Did the decisions cost Watford? They were 11 points up. Surely you should be seeing the game out no matter what.
They should be seeing the game out, in fairness.
Even missing the players, you know, obviously they're all in the sick bay.
Yeah, they put an awful lot, and they said after, they put an awful lot into the first hour because it was so important for them to hit the ground running. They were never going to come from behind, and Watford typically haven't come from behind. It's more of a front running kind of a thing, particularly when they're playing with the sweeper. But they just kind of, they were really flagging. Like, Pádraic Mahtani hadn't played, Ozzie hadn't played, a lot of lads hadn't played, and they were flagging towards the end. There was a lot of young guys who were getting their first taste of the championship, and like nothing can like replicate that last 10 or 15 minutes, and they would be really disappointed, especially when Mahtani put them two up with that point from out the sideline. They would be so disappointed that they didn't close it out. But surely, 20 years on from Jimmy Cooney, that we're destined that something like this would happen again.
When you sat on the field and you got your replay.
This could be your rub of the green.
Hey, but look, like you, all the Watford people are going on about the decisions, but as a Tipperary person, I think I need to bat for us as well. When it was late on in the game and we were a point down, we have a couple of images here, and I think you can see Tipperary clearly should have got a free here. If we could look at the first one, you can see that Noel Connors has clearly chopped across Jason Ford there. And you could...
Kablamo!
You can see how hard he's been hit there. And I think Brendan Maher gets chopped over the top of the head by Pádraic Mahtani as well. There's only a point in it. Bam! Lads, I think Tipperary were robbed here. No? You're not giving me much chopper.
If we could just see Tumbleweed kind of blowing past the desk.
Whatever credibility he brought into the studio was evaporating as seconds tick on.
Talk about leaving the lad.
You could argue that Mickey Cahill was a little undeserving of a red card, but it's not a clear-cut argument either. Like, there was a little flick of the hurley, and that is a part of the game that the GA and the official are trying to stamp out. So I think by the letter of the law, it was a yellow. I wonder, had the referee in his mind as he was giving the second yellow, had he had it very clear in his mind that he'd already shown him a yellow card? I'm not quite sure.
Red cards were interesting all weekend, because Sean O'Donoghue, he got a yellow card in the incident that Aaron Glenn got a red. He possibly could have got a yellow just after for a tug at the jersey. Austin Gleeson had a pull of the helmet on Patrick Bonner Maher, not his first time, and he was talking this, you know, the talk this week is that basically because Watford might feel like they were done out of a result, that he's going to get off.
Well, that is a lot of it, because that would have been a major talking point. If Watford had won the game by a point and he'd stayed on the field, that would have been probably one of the major talking points, and it was a picture in most of the papers on Monday morning, but that would have been the talking point. Is
that how the GA justice system works, though? You know, you've clearly... clearly guilty of an offence, but because your team as a collective was robbed by a really poor decision, we're not going to do anything about it. That can't be how the system works. Well, it was how the system worked, where you already mentioned 98 and you boys sitting down in the field and refusing to leave the ground. I mean, Clare agreed to that replay on the understanding that Colin Lynch would be there for the throw-in, and you know that was GA justice in a very similar vein. That didn't go Gerlach Nan's way, but I don't understand how... I genuinely don't believe this is the way it went down, that because they felt Waterford had been wrong, they weren't going to bring Austin Gleeson to book the head guard pull. We are. And O'Donoghue was blessed in the Cork Limerick game not to be sent.
But I don't think he should have got a yellow.
For the jersey tug?
No. He got a yellow when Galan turned around and hit him twice. I might add, hit him once and then missed him and then hit him the second time. I'm not sure what O'Donoghue got the yellow for. In the first place,
maybe
nobody's
the pulling of the jersey off the ball.
He was definitely interfering in some way, shape, or form with Aaron Galan. He's not going to hit him for no reason. And like,
this is an issue I have interfering with. Like, this, it cannot turn into a non-contact sport.
If I started
sport.
Pinching you, for example, and I'm not saying Sean O'Donoghue did, but if on the field I started pinching you, or I started digging the hurley into you, and we've heard of even more inappropriate things being done in the field, like, you kind of have to tell a lad, get away from me, and in no uncertain terms. I mean, I've played matches and, you know, I might have my hand, and I never foul, but I might have had my hand on someone for a minute, and they dig back with the hurley three or four times into the arm. You can't straighten your arm for a week, but you're like, do you know what? Fair enough, I deserved that. And if Sean O'Donoghue had been messing around with Galan, I mean, of course, by the letter of the law, he had to be sent off, but the lay of the land is, I'm not quite sure if Aaron Galan deserves to get sent off there. And I know credibility's already shot, Dave, but...
You're really willing to put this argument forward that he has a little bit of a nibble at him first off, didn't quite make the contact he was looking for, so he has a proper go at him and he digs the hurley into his chest. Is that what you want to see on under 12 and under 14, under 16 pitches? Lad's been slapped off
the
ball.
Don't go all Tommy Gorman on me here, right?
And it's just an honest question.
Like, we can't see for sure that maybe O'Donoghue's still staying at him and he's
doesn't really matter what O'Donoghue's doing.
Yeah, look, I know it's a red card. Of course, I'm not saying that the referee was wrong in any way, shape or form, but there is a law of the land thing or light of the land thing, and it just depends, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me.
Okay, this is O'Donoghue's up against a guy who's making a second ever championship start. He's only a young fella. He's a former underage star. They both are, so maybe this was told to O'Donoghue, look, try and have a little go at him, try and get into his head, and look, whatever he was doing worked because he got rid of a potential marquee forward in the Limerick setup for the next 10 years, and Cork had to play the rest of the game with an extra man.
If you look at it as well, like Aaron Gillan is inexperienced and did that when there was a line ball 10 yards away from him when he was definitely going to get caught. And Richie English seemingly got a slap of some kind that John Kiely said it was that bad in his ribs that he wanted to put up a picture. But nobody caught that.
Yeah.
Because the action was at the other end of the field. So it's a bit of cuteness as well. Like.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. So Limerick against Waterford, I think that's the biggest of the games this weekend. So we've Limerick, Waterford, Tipclare, Galway, Dublin's a bit of a dead rubber, really. And then, of course, there's the final game, Kilkenny against Wexford, which is arguably just as big as Limerick, Waterford. But first of all, Dan Shanahan was pretty much poor mouthing at the start of last week, you know, about all of Waterford's injuries. They ended up having Noel Connors, they ended up having Austin Gleeson, Pádraig Mahony. And if you look back to last year's All-Ireland team, at that stage they didn't have Conor Gleeson available and they didn't have Tom Devine. So it's not as if they were coming out with an under-12 team here, Dave.
No, it's not. And as soon as I saw the starting 15, I thought that we certainly had maybe been writing them off a little too early. And I'm not quite sure you could accuse them of playing the poor mouth, because everybody was queuing up to write them off after the Clare game. A lot of people didn't think they'd get a single point out of this round robin series. But you looked at the 15 that they sent out, and yes, when you lose three or four guys, the depth of your bench is obviously going to be diluted significantly. And you've already talked, Michael, about the last 10 minutes when some of the younger guys started to flag, some of the guys who maybe didn't have an awful lot of hurling under their belt started to flag. And Derek McGrath looks behind him and he probably doesn't see the array of talent that he might have done had all these other guys been available. But they had enough class in the 15 to win the game. They should have won the game. And this week they'll have been brought on, the likes of Gleeson and Mahony will have been brought on an awful lot. Kevin Moran's kicked back to captain the team. I think they're going to be a better team than they were when they were going out against Tipperary, because they just have a little bit of momentum behind them now.
Talk about the matchup here. I think midfield's going to be a huge area. And they talk about the middle eight, the half hours and the midfielders on both sides, but there's going to be more than just those in that area, I would say.
Oh, it's going to be seriously congested, yeah. But Waterford is still going to... They're going to want to try and create that space that Jamie Barron got into last week. Like, he was so effective last week. Like, he shot 3 points from 100 yards out. So, like, they will want to try and leave him so there is space, but I can imagine that there's going to be an awful lot of bodies. The two half-back lines... Well, the two half-forward lines will be squeezed back into midfield, and then you have the four midfielders in there as well. It's going to be seriously congested. Again, Limerick are going to try and create that space that they got for Flanagan the last day. Flanagan was outstanding the last day. A guy that couldn't make the under-21 team a couple of years ago. He was absolutely brilliant as well. Gillan will be a loss in the sense that it's one less guy. Someone's going to start now. So probably Pat Ryan or someone like that will start, and then they're going to be short maybe a man to come in. And it's funny that the Shane Dowland scenario a couple of years ago, like, we would never have envisaged a Limerick team that he wouldn't be on.
Yeah.
But it's almost like he's a luxury player in the style that they're playing. Kind of.
In what sense?
That they're looking for really mobile players, I would suppose, as well. Really, mobility is one of the key things.
Like, you could savage work rate.
Yeah, you couldn't go.
Don't associate that with them, Dowling. Even looking at Graeme Mulcahy, like, for the first maybe 5-6 years longer of his career, he was just associated with being a score getter, finisher. He wasn't necessarily associated with this hard running, hooking, tackling, chasing back. But Mulcahy's probably realised, and it's hard to believe he only turned 28.
He's been around for
not longer than that. But he has had to realise that he's not going to play in this Kylie Kinnerk team if he doesn't up his work rate. And he was incredible on Saturday evening. And I know it was late in the game, but there was a real illustration on that sideline, his little skirmish with Mark Coleman, that just seemed to it was an example of what Kylie expects from Mulcahy and every other forward. And I just wonder, as talented as Dowling is, I mean, what is he going to bring to that Limerick forward line when that is what's required of every single one of them?
So we'll just ask any of our viewers out there, if you have any questions or any thoughts you have, please send them in to us and we'll try and read out as many as we can. But it's interesting you're talking about the work rate of this Limerick team. It's absolutely outrageous, I'd say. And we have a couple of images here. I want to show how Limerick hunt in packs. And especially in that first half from the get-go, like, they were just, you know, Tom Morrissey, Kyle Hayes, and also Garrod Hegarty. They're in their own half. So this is Shane Kingston with a ball just coming inside his own 65. And look at the amount of Limerick players there. There's a bit of a Venn diagram going where two of the Limerick guys are. But there's 9 players in between the 65 and more or less the 45 there. That's the sort of work rate we're seeing. And the next image as well, we're looking at a hilarious level of hounding from Limerick late on as well. I think there's 8 in the image there. And that might be that block down.
Sean Finn's block, yeah.
Late on. And then we've one more image as well when Christopher Joyce is driving forward late on in the game. I think Limerick are three ahead at this stage. But look at the bodies getting to him. Now, he's got options either side of him. But because he's been hounded so much, you're not going to see those options, Michael.
No, you definitely won't. No, like, you have a split second to hit the ball, let alone look up and try and throw a hand pass out. But the work rate, like, we've said it a couple of times before, but like Limerick looked like they had 16 on the field. They really did. And
Mulcahy, 14.
Yeah, like it was mad. It looked like they had the extra man. And I think a part of that was, as good as Mark Coleman is, by Jesus, he dwelled on the ball a lot.
I thought
he dwelled on the ball an awful lot.
Before you get into the Coleman part, there is a risk though, isn't there, with this kind of work rate? Because, I mean, you saw it break down for the Pat Horgan goal. Like, there is space. If there's eight guys in that picture, in that frame, there's clearly acres of space elsewhere in the field. And if the man in possession and the opposition team can just take that split second to get his bearings, and they did for the Pat Horgan goal, I'm sure Waterford will be looking at that, knowing that somebody's free in a really dangerous position. If we can just get the hands free, if we can just get the ball flicked away, but you can't question Limerick's thinking behind going after the man in possession in the way they have there.
Okay, the Coleman thing. So, what are your thoughts on it? You don't think he was the right man for the sweeper?
No, not necessarily. No, I think he's probably the best ball player to have. I just thought he was a bit lackadaisical when he was on the ball. Like, Graham Mulcahy blocked him down over the far side, the terrace sideline.
And Tom Morrissey got a point. He got blocked down like, side too.
Not in the month of Sundays should he have been blocked down. He had about 5 seconds to clear the ball. There was a ball that went over by the end line as well. It was just a bit lackadaisical. I just thought he should have been just trying to get the ball in his hand and break the tackle and offload it. I just thought they were trying to do too many fancy things at times. They were going for a 5-yard pass into the ground trying to beat a man, and it was just when it breaks down, which it invariably did a few times the other day, it must have been seriously frustrating. I just think it would be a good lesson learned for him. I don't see him being that casual on the ball again.
It was malaise that set in though on that last 15 minutes of the Cork defence, because Nash was looking up the ball and he saw so many options, so much space. And I thought there was an air of complacency that set in. Even their first touch started to let them down.
No,
Coleman's
did,
in particular. They needed a couple of attempts to rise the ball, and that really spurred on the Limerick forwards to get stuck into them again.
Yeah, I think it broke down against Tipperary as well in the second half when they lost the 9-point lead. The one thing I'd say about Coleman, he had 13 possessions in that second half and 10 he did the right thing with. So there's those two blockdowns, and he got dispossessed with a solo when he was in the other half in the first half. But he set up a point, he scored a point, he stopped Barry Murphy from scoring a goal. Like, he hooked Barry Murphy after Pat Ryan had scuffed the shot. So I don't think it's all bad.
No, it's not all bad, no.
Just to move to the tactics board here, lads, we possibly won't dwell too long on it. But I'm just trying to think about how congested this middle area is going to be. So we'll have Waterford in blue here. And, like, this is probably more or less how Limerick will set up with the forward line. These guys switch around. Mulcahy often goes full forward to try and get a mismatch, because having him on Damien Cahalan seems to work quite well. That's how it started out. And then you had Flanagan over and Sean O'Donoghue. That worked out well. But just for this game, I would imagine that you're going to have Morrissey, Hayes and Hegarty in this area trying to protect their midfield. And by the way, Keen Lynch and Darragh O'Donovan were both absolutely excellent. I don't think Darragh O'Donovan has been spoken about.
He's unsung, isn't he, really? Yeah,
he is. And I think we know that Waterford are going to draw out as well. So look at how congested that area is going to be. So I like the idea of the matchup of Kevin Moran and Jamie Barron, who scored 5.23 from play between them last year in the Championship, against Darragh O'Donovan and Keen Lynch, who from two games have 8 points between them. How do you see this playing out?
I just think it's going to be an absolute war zone in there, really. Like, and it essentially is, it's just who can get on the ball and who can get it over this area here as quick as possible. Because Waterford, Tom Devine with his synthetic hurl, looked unbelievably sharp the last day. Like, every time he got the ball, it was on point. Morris mightn't start, but I'd imagine he's back in the equation as well, and would be another player to come in there. It's essentially just who can win that kind of ball in around there, get the ball inside. Because obviously, as Dave said for the goal, for Patrick Horgan's goal, when you commit that many bodies around the middle and you don't maybe win the ball, if a quick ball is sent in, you are 1-on-1 or 2-on-2. So that battle, it's not going to be for the faint-hearted in there anyway.
And again, Tom Devine is going to be a guy targeted in there. Those Waterford inside forwards seem to mill around him, and at times Tom Devine was pulling Seamus Kennedy out of the way, trying to set up mismatches in there and create more space. We actually have an image of how Waterford were quite quick on the breaks as well. There was a free went in, or a shot went in, and the ball came down off the post there, and the two Waterford guys both got to the ball first. It was handed out and thrown over the bar.
That was unbelievable. unbelievably, like, it was just bang, 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 bang. I think Devine got the ball, it was on his hurl, and he just had it hand passed away, and Curran had the ball over the bar.
So they're just very sharp, and, like, Tip, I think, were a little bit reactive, but Watford were all over them. And there's just one more image as well of how they managed to suck Tipperary out. So look at Pádraig Maher there, he's with the FIFA 95 star under his feet. Huge amount of space behind him where Tom Devine and Seamus Kendi are. I mean, if a nice ball goes in for Kendi or for Devine there, he can do serious damage, especially if he's got runners off him. But you can see beyond Pádraig Maher, he's let his man go because he needs to protect. So Tip are kind of, they're caught either way. If you go short, Tipperary are caught. If you go over Pádraig Maher's head, he's caught. It's no man's land. And eventually Jamie Barron gets the ball around the yellow circle and just throws it over the bar. And I think that tactically they're quite well set up, but no better team than Limerick to actually be stuck into them.
Yeah, no, it's going to be really intriguing, isn't it? It'll be intriguing to see whether Waterford will go 15 on 15 again. It worked so well. I'm not sure, would Tipperary have been preparing for a sweeper? It's kind of hard to know, but they were kind of shell-shocked there early on. Waterford kind of hit the ground running straight away, but it'll be interesting to see how they set up, because they won't want to leave Flanagan, Mulcahy at all in here, like, with all that space. So,
but that takes away from the potential effectiveness of Devine at the other end, doesn't
time,
it?
Yeah,
because if they're going five or six, which they did at times in the second half, in the first half against Tipperary, well, then you know there's a very good chance there's going to be breakers in alongside Devine. He's either going to break it down or he's going to win primary possession himself. If they bring somebody back permanently, obviously no Fizer or De Burka to do it. I mean, did Austin Gleeson perform that role at times? Was he stationed in that position in the Tipperary game as you guys watched
it? Yeah, he was centre back, and like Jason Ford was able to, in the first half anyway, was able to float away from him. And much like Pádraig Maher there, you need to hold the position to some degree. Like, your man could end up scoring 4 points from play if you're a centre back, but you still have to do your job first and foremost.
Yeah, him and Brick were kind of just parked around the D.
Are you talking about afterwards for the second half?
Yeah, afterwards for the second half.
Tipper with
14
minutes.
They were just kind of parked around the D and picked up an awful lot of ball, but probably both kind of tired near the end and just created a bit of space. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I saw Devine against Clare when they played with 14 for most of the game and when they played with sweeper, and he's brilliant in that role. But he just looked like a different man the other day. It's just like, rather than breaking the ball, having two on you, he was breaking the ball and there was loads of runners around him. There was no spare man. So, who am I to tell anybody what to do? But I'd love to see them going 15 on 15 again.
We'll get predictions in a minute. But just before we leave this discussion, there's an argument going on our YouTube page. And apparently it's quite funny, so I'll have to trust our producer Tommy on this one. So there's Paul, and who's a Waterford man, and we have Bookworm, who's a Tipperary troll, apparently. So Paul goes, refs bringing pals to be umpires has to stop. Proper trained umpires is what we need. Shouldn't have been a red for Cahill leader. # Daisha Boo. You'll never beat the blue and gold, Paul. We love whipping Waterford. We never get sick of it. Can't believe you got a draw out of us. Tip had beaten Waterford by an average of 14 points in the previous four championship games. Paul goes, haha, Bookworm, you lot won't be getting out of Munster while we will, right, which is obviously not exactly the biggest zinger of a comment. And then Bookworm, not only will we get out of Munster, we'll sneak the All-Ireland. The wonderful Waterford whipping wannabes. The alliteration, that's alliteration for you, dude. Stick to the water sports. Right, well, there you go, lads. I'm not going to ask you to follow that up, but because you really can't. So Limerick for this year. I think Limerick are a serious All-Ireland challenger. When I looked at them last year in the qualifier against Kilkenny in Nolan Park that they lost by 3 points, they seemed like a team that was panicking. Three times during the game, there was a ball on the ground and they tried to pull on it. You know, under no real pressure. Just lift up the ball. They were panicked. This year, team came from 8 points down to beat Galway in the promotion clash, more or less.
Yeah, it just looked like a different side. Sometimes it's hard to just put your finger on it, but like, obviously, there was such an influx of young fellas there. It is hard to kind of make that impact straight away in your first year at senior, but they look just to have a different confidence this year, you know? And I think it says a lot that there's actually not that many Napiercig lads involved, that they're actually going that well, that they can just pull in a lad here or there where they want. It's such a good league. I think it probably can't be understated how important getting out 1B was. Like, that had been, like, a thorn in their side for, I think, 6 or 7 years. And that would just breed confidence as well. And in the manner that they came back against Galway, fair enough, they probably weren't at full tilt, but the manner they came back to beat the All-Ireland champions would have given them an awful lot of confidence. And I've said it before, they're two 15s, you put the first 15 down and the second 15, I don't know, will you get a county with a better 30 than they have? So that will definitely play into their hands if they can progress from Munster.
For me, the way they won the game on Saturday night, I mean, Tipperary didn't really ask them many questions in the first game. Everything kind of went their way, bar a few wides from Galan, a couple of frees in the first half. But they dominated the game. They were on top for the entire game. You never really felt they were under real pressure, that they were always going to see it out. But they were asked so many questions on Saturday night. You lose your centre-half back in Declan Hannan, the kind of your captain, the guy who's supposed to be leading and anchoring that defence. You go to a man down on the stroke of half-time.
You're free-taker as well. Trailing in the game
as well, and then you find yourself three down heading into the last few minutes and having been three up, and you're thinking, we've thrown this away now. So they actually won the game in a way that we hadn't yet seen from this Limerick team, because they hadn't been put in that position.
Dave, you lost the run yourself. They drew the game. Commentary can do funny things to people.
We better have a look at that result again. Yeah, I would think they would have got more satisfaction out of that point almost than they did the two against Tipperary for the way they had to dig it out.
And who's going to win this game?
I would fancy Limerick. I know this at the Gaeilge Ground is, you know, nominally Waterford's home venue for these games, but it is Limerick who are the home team this weekend. I think they'll have just taken so much confidence from the last two matches. I think Waterford now heading into yet another week. I just don't know. I think they've missed their chance. I think they're coming into this game on 2 points. They're still in it, but I think Waterford will give as good as they're getting, but I see Limerick winning this by 3 or 4.
And how do you see Tipperary against Clare? We'll just move on to that, because Brendan Maher said after the game that Tip's confidence isn't there. Perhaps they're trying too hard. And I think we know what he means by that. Maybe they're clammed up a little bit.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, the last 15 minutes will give them some confidence. But we're expecting, like, I'm expecting that for 70 minutes. And I was expecting a big backlash in the first half against Cork. We didn't get it. We got it in the second half. I was expecting a backlash then against Waterford. And, you know, they were hit for six nearly straight away. I'm reluctant to say it, but because I think they're still good enough to win the All Ireland, but I think they could get caught at the weekend. I just think, like Limerick, Clare have legs everywhere, and I just think they're gonna try and run them ragged, and I think they have the players to run them ragged. We haven't seen much of O'Donnell yet. And the space, if that space is afforded to them, that was afforded.
They'll have had the week off as well.
That cannot be understated. Like Waterford have been playing with predominantly the same bodies. Paddy Maher had a strapping on his quad the other day and just didn't look right. He didn't look like he was moving right. When he was around the ball, he wasn't getting in his hand like he usually would. He wasn't driving out like he usually would. Will he be any better in a week? I don't think he will. As I said, I'm reluctant to say it, but I think this is a massive opportunity for Clare, and I think they'll sneak it at the weekend.
They remind me of Mayo last year in the qualifiers. I couldn't figure out throughout the championship whether Mayo were just waiting to be put out of their misery, or that they're one big half of championship football away from exploding into life, and which they did in the replay against Roscommon. Where are Tipperary in that regard? Are they just waiting for someone to end it for them?
Are they
a spark away from being the Tip of 2016?
Yeah,
what side of the argument are you coming down on?
Well, the big criticism I had of Tipperary all year, and which remains, is number one, they hadn't settled on a team all year, so I think the league was completely wasted because he ripped up the script as soon as Leinster started. Munster started, so that showed straight away what have you been doing all spring. Another thing is the long ball after long ball, and I actually, to be fair to Tip, and we've got an image of it here, I think that they did try and play the ball around in the first half a little bit. So Paddy Maher got the ball here, and I know you were just cutting the back off him there, Mick, but with that, I'm only joking. With that yellow arrow in, that's the ball played into Seamus Callanan, who does a reverse hand pass for John.
This is outrageous, though. So If this had been scored, it would have been Tip had to do this all game. Yeah.
So Callanan gets the ball, the red arrow is his hand pass to the white arrow, which is John McGrath coming through. He gives it to Bubbles. Bubbles probably should have went low and hit it in under the keeper. And there's another image just a little bit after. Again, it's Paddy Maher who does a crossfield ball into space for Jason Ford. And you can see by the fact that there is no traffic within the D, which would be the scoring zone in a lot of places. It just shows that Waterford were being dragged around the place. But Tip reverted to type and went long again. Whereas with Clare, if we look at image 5 here as well, they really do know how to open up the space. And that ball goes straight into Shane O'Donnell. And because Tip haven't been protecting the full back line, as we've looked at earlier, Clare have a huge opportunity here.
They do, yeah. And they have the players that can exploit those kind of deficiencies, we'll say, in the Tipperary team. Yeah, it's funny just what Dave was saying there, yeah. You kind of just think Tip are so, like, teetering on the edge. And it is that, like, which way is it going to fall? I just find it... they just haven't been convincing enough yet this year. They've hurled for 50 minutes in the Championship, realistically. 15.
They've led for 14 out of 244 of their last minutes.
Yeah. Oh, you know, like Cork had them on the precipice, couldn't tip them over. Mm. Waterford could have put the lights out, couldn't manage to get the job done.
Are they the gutsiest team in the Championship then?
Well, they're certainly not lacking in character. But it seems that it's not a collective thing. It's, you know, the McGrath brothers and Shane McCallan didn't really have a great day last day. They were quiet by their own standards, but yet other guys around them were able to pick it up. You saw how brilliant John McGrath was against Cork in the second half in particular. Then Bubbles comes on at half-time and he has a big impact. Ryan seems to be relying on individuals to drag the team, not over the line, to the line, and then they'll hope they get over the line the next day. And someday that's just not going to be enough.
Yeah, to win the last 20 minutes against Waterford 2-8 to 3 points, you can't keep doing that. I actually like Jake Morris as a sub. I think he's come on and made an impact both days. Lads, we're going to have to move on because time is dwindling away. I want to have a quick look at the Joe McDonagh table as well, because we're heading into round 5 there at the moment, and it's been pretty exciting stuff. Westmead look like they're through, basically. They're going to be in the Joe McDonagh final. That's on the GAA.ie tables as well. At GAA league tables. Who are you expecting to come through other than Westmead there?
Well, Carlo, Westmead have a great chance of putting Carlo out this weekend, unless other results go their way.
Yeah.
And Carlo obviously beat Westmead in the Division 2A final. As we said last week, kind of, Mouse Kavanagh is gone for Carlo. It was a big loss, but it didn't stop them last week. In fairness, we didn't know that that Ross King and Chad Dwyer were going to be out for Laois.
Yeah.
But Westmead kind of look a step ahead at the moment. They'll be very keen to try and probably avoid Carlo, and will probably put out a strong team, and they've won the 4 games so far, so I don't see any reason why they would not want to try to kind of make the clean sweep and go into the final. But it's congested enough there. Antrim play Kerry this weekend as well, so one of them could possibly pick up the pieces if Carlo are beaten.
Yeah, so Mead, Laois, Carlo, Westmead and Antrim, Kerry. So that's the Joe McDonagh table for 2018. In 2019, Offaly should be down there. I put up a poll during the week just to see, what do people think that Leinster should be changed to 16th for 2019, or should Offaly go down? And there's a fairly stark response to it. 494 votes, and 78% say that Offaly, should they avoid relegation? No. Mick, you are an Offaly man. Do you think that they should be going down for 2019?
I do, yeah. I think it's probably about time that we took our medicine. As much as I'd love to see Offaly playing top flight hurling, if you go back through the results over the last 10 years, like, the majority of the big defeats in the Championship have been against Offaly. Offaly have been on the tail end of 25 points or 30 points over the last kind of 10 years. I think kind of people need to kind of cut the bullshit of the tradition, and Offaly were a powerhouse. At the moment, we're not a powerhouse, unfortunately. People are saying that if you go back to the Joe McDonagh, you might lose players because they're not exposed at the higher level. I don't buy that argument at all. Will you be able to keep players when they've been beaten by 20-something points by Wexford and been annihilated by Dublin? I think players would nearly prefer to go back to the Joe McDonagh, rebuild, and if they're good enough to get back into the All-Ireland Championship and get back into Leinster, they will. And I think it's about time, probably, that we've something to prove now.
Yeah.
It's about time, I think, we should take our medicine and go back and prove.
As well, I think it would dilute the quality of the Joe McDonagh. I had a bit of a barney with Liam Sheedy on Twitter during the week. He thought that perhaps I was kind of talking down the weaker teams in the Joe McDonagh. But the point that I was trying to make, that if you take an extra team out of the Joe McDonagh, that means you'll have 11 teams between the two provinces, right? So that means the top 11 are up there. You're taking one of the stronger teams out of the Joe McDonagh. So that's diluting the level of competition there, taking it less seriously, perhaps, from the GA end. And also, at the moment, if you've got 10 teams in the provinces, the teams ranked 11th and 12th will provide that preliminary quarter-final of the All-Ireland Series. If you put another team up, it'll be the 12th and 13th. So that actually makes it weaker from that point of view. And that's just cold hard facts, Dave.
Yeah, I think, like, I'd agree with Michael. It is the traditionalists that look at the history of Offaly hurling and believe, you know, it's the All-Irelands we won. It's only 18 years since we contested in All-Ireland that we don't deserve to be there. But unfortunately, they do. That is their level now, Offaly. And they've shown that now. I don't think playing 4 weeks in a row helped them at all. They probably have the weakest panel of all of the teams, as well as maybe not having the stars in their starting 15 as the other counties in the Leinster Championship. But the opportunity is there for them. I think Kevin Martin has put in a structure that the players are buying into, that there seems to be a feeling for the first time in several years in Offaly that the basics are in place, that they can actually start to to make some progress. And to do that in the John McDonagh Cup is definitely feasible. To get themselves back into the knockout matches in the All-Ireland Championship next season is a carrot that I think any member of the current Offaly panel would be happy enough to go after. And you're going to get some confidence back by winning games.
And enjoy the matches. You'll actually enjoy hurling rather than getting hammered every week. But that brings us to the final round of games in Leinster. So we're going to get on to Kilkenny and Wexford shortly. Dublin against Galway is the first dead rubber, really, of the year. So Galway have been hugely, hugely impressive. So just the thing I'm wondering is, are they going to trial players out this weekend? Will Niall Burke get a start? Will Jason Flynn get a start? Will Brian Concannon come back in? Maybe Sean Loftus?
Yeah, I'd imagine you won't see maybe Joe Canning, who has picked up a few different knocks in the last couple of games. I'd imagine you won't see him maybe in a couple, or maybe the elder statesman, maybe not David Burke. It's kind of hard to know. They'll want to obviously win again, and obviously Dublin are strong, as very strong, as they've shown. It's another opportunity for kind of guys to come in again. It's like when you get a chance, probably Galway's in that situation now that they're that competitive and that strong. When you get a chance, if you impress, your first sub on or your second sub on, or maybe you pick up a starting jersey. So that's kind of a luxury position that they're in at the moment. Dublin, it's kind of a pity that there is a dead rubber, and it's a pity that Dublin who are really competitive.
Could have beaten Dublin.
Yeah, you know, and they're gone now. And like, fair enough, Offaly were weaker, and by June 2nd, I think they were out of the championship, which is a bit mad in itself. But Dublin are stronger and can compete against a lot of teams and are going to be gone, you know, the first week in June, which just seems a bit strange.
How do you feel about Pat Gilroy after year one, Dave?
I'd be very enthused by what he's managed to come up with in such a short space of time. A lot of question marks over their league form, obviously, but you can clearly see there was an awful lot going on in the background. He used so many players, he was trying to figure out whether some of the elder statesmen still had what it took to perform at that level. And I think the likes of Alan Nolan, Colin Keeney, they've shown that bringing them back in was a masterstroke. I think they've more to gain from this game. I think they'll take something with them from this year's Leinster Championship. If they beat the All-Ireland champions, they will say to themselves, it'll be qualified by the fact that Galway have really nothing to play for, and they probably may have made a few changes. But Dublin could finish level on points with either Kilkenny or Wexford, as will be the case unless they draw, and head off into the winter knowing that real progress has been made, and knowing how close they came to beating both Kilkenny and Wexford. They could have been in the Leinster final. I think they'll be very happy maybe come October, November time. Right now, I'd say they're desperately disappointed. I'd say they're devastated at how this has got away from them, and they're still pining for that last 10 minutes at Parnell Park against Kilkenny, I would think, because that 10 minutes was their season.
And as well, like at the start of the year, people were saying, is Pat Gilroy a football man going into hurling? And there was a Smurfit kind of business breakfast around last November, and I emceed it with Pat Gilroy up on the stage, and I said to him, are you worried about the perception of you as a football man in hurling? And like, he was in good old form, and he goes, who'd be saying that? And I went, me? He kind of laughed it off and just went on about the, you know, like the things that you need in all sports, which is hard work and, you know, good plan and system and everything, all that. And he's really proved it, and I'm actually delighted because I want to see Dublin going well, especially because plenty of my club mates play for them. So
I'm delighted as well that a couple of the older guys who were, we'll say, cast aside or weren't involved under Gerard Cunningham towards the end, that they got back in and got a chance again. Because I just have an issue with guys being discarded, particularly at a certain age or something like that. Gilroy could have easily come in with a clean sweep and just went with young fellas, but he saw what Keeney, Alan Nolan, even Johnny McCaffrey and these guys could offer to the squad. It was great for them. At least, and obviously it's not ending perfectly this year, but at least they're on the field for Dublin. And there was always been a debate about whether they could get the best hurlers on the field, or were these guys really worth their place? Were they that big of a loss? But it's obvious that they were.
Yeah. So we're going to go on to the biggest game of the weekend, which is Kilkenny-Wexford. Kilkenny at home in Nolan Park. And Davy Fitz was talking after the game against Galway, when they were pretty much brutalised, about how you should put all your money on Kilkenny going into this game. We have a little clip here.
I put my house in Kilkenny. That's fact. That's been straight. If they don't win it after a fresh break, like they'll get a week now and they'll be buzzing for road. That's it. But you never know. We might pull a performance and I might stick out another 15. We'll see what the crack is.
Do you buy into that?
Small little fish.
Yeah. Do you buy into that? Like Davy Fitz, I was looking at his championship record over the years with Waterford, Clare and Wexford. He's played 26, won 12, drew 2 and lost 12. What do you make of that record? And
yeah, when you put it down like that, I suppose it's a little different. The kind of two league campaigns are probably what have, and the victory against Kilkenny last year in the championship is probably what has stood out from his reign so far, and maybe bringing them to somewhere that people probably didn't think they could get to in such a short space of time. But they were poor last weekend now, and they were kind of shell shocked straight away. They were hit with a goal and a couple of points straight off the bat, and they just never really recovered. But you know, there was an awful lot of ball fumbled in the middle third. They never really got the kind of running game going at all. Like, Dermot O'Keefe didn't get on the ball. Sean Murphy got on a bit of ball, actually, in fairness. But a lot of the other guys, Paddy Foley did get on a good bit of ball, in fairness. But Kevin Foley was anonymous around the middle of the field.
A lot of their big men were anonymous.
Yeah, you know, they were.
Conor McDonald couldn't get enough ball. Lee Chin basically wasn't really massively in the game.
I disagree with you, by the way, in that this is the biggest game of the weekend. I don't think this comes close to the Waterford Limerick game, to be honest. Like, Waterford losing
this
the weekend,
they're gone. Leinster semi-final as well.
It is, but I don't know, did you read Jackie Tyrrell today? Very interesting piece on if either of these teams, and it's more likely going to be Wexford, 6-7 points down heading into the last 15 minutes, do you subconsciously just ease off a little bit for a couple of reasons? Firstly, you know this is not knockout, that you're through to a knockout championship match in the weeks to come anyway. Secondly, the incentive for chasing Kilkenny down and beating them is a potential hammering at the hands of Galway in a Leinster final in 3 weeks' time, where you'll get a month of a break into that preliminary quarter final, where you know you're going to be against a team that will help you rebuild your confidence.
Jesus, talk.
And he was also talking about how any of the players he's talked to have been talking about how mentally this four-game run in 5 weeks, or 4-4 as it is for some teams, is killing them, and they're not actually enjoying it at all. And when you hear Davey speaking that way, he was really dumbing down Wexford's chances in the build-up to the Galway game. I would hope that he's delivering a very different message in private to these players, because if he isn't, I think there's a chance these Wexford players are starting to believe what David Fitzgerald is saying about they're not able to continue playing week in, week out. They're going to be a little flatter. He talked about how he didn't think they'd be able to come up with the same intensity in the Kilkenny game as they had shown against Dublin and Offaly. And that's exactly what happened. Once Galway got the early scores, Wexford never really came back at them.
They didn't. And similarly to the league quarterfinal, when Kilkenny went down to Wexford Park, Wexford didn't score from play in the first half at all. And Sean Murphy got on as the spare man, and you need him getting involved. We've talked about it before.
It's strange talk, though, like, as Dave said. It is strange talk.
I don't like it at all.
Kevin Martin said after the Wexford game that Offaly were just, like, they were dead. They were beaten, you know what I mean? And then they had another week to come, and they weren't able to turn things around. Wexford had the first week off. They beat Dublin or whatever. They had a canter against Offaly, let's call a spade a spade. And then they didn't show up against Galway. So, like, I don't think he can be talking too much. And they knew this was, like, without being smart, and I think there should be more rest weeks, but they knew this was coming. And they've been playing league games week on week as well. That's the worst kind of poor mountain I've heard yet now. Like, but as Dave said, you would hope it's not seeping in, or that's, I presume it's a different conversation happening behind closed doors.
They have to pick themselves up off the floor too. They got three scores from play against Galway, got absolutely annihilated on all bar the scoreline. And it was Wally Walsh's goal at the very end in the 75th minute that gave them some sort of respectability.
I think they've more to lose in this game. Like, if Wexford lose by 3 or 4 points and throw in a pretty decent performance, they'll take an awful lot into that preliminary quarter final. Whereas if Kilkenny get turned over on their own patch in front of their own fans, having been bullied physically by the All-Ireland champions in the last game, then their confidence is on the floor and there are serious questions being asked of them. I think the best case scenario for everybody here is that Wexford head off into the qualifiers, Kilkenny have won by 3 or 4, and nobody kind of loses face, well, unless Kilkenny get a hiding in the Leinster final, that is. And then where do they go after that?
Okay, we're going to lose you now, Dave, anyway.
No problem.
Because we're bringing in Ger Gilroy and Leon Blanche of Boyle Sports. In the meantime, we're going to go through the OTB Vols. Tommy Walsh was sharing a story at our pre-All-Ireland final roadshow show in Galway last summer. It's a bit of a classic.
Well, I will say, it was a funny story. Like, just I was booed coming in by the Galway lads, but what I will say is, my first match for Kilkenny was under 14 in a Tony Forrestal game, and I was marking no other than the legend Johnny Marr. And
how big was his name?
He said to me, "Father, we're still looking at the YouTube clips of him hitting all those lads in that county final a few years ago." I don't know, was it from Gert or was it Port Tone? I think it was Gert, was it?
Thomas's,
was it? It was the funniest. Boy, Mark, Johnny Marr scored 2 points off me. I remember we were looking at the Galway lads. They had lovely gear. They were kind of beating everyone all around them. That was a Tony Forrest. We went on and played Galway in the Nina Co-op, which is the under 16 All-Ireland. Ger Farrar was midfield, brilliant player again, scored 16 points. I think he scored most of them from play, from midfield. Knocked us out with that. But this is where the funny bit comes then. So we end up playing Laois in a Shield match. And you'd be talking about motivations. Our motivation, if you won the Shield, you got a new pair of boots. Everyone got a new pair of boots. So our manager, John McCormick, was on to us. Lads, we have to win this. We have to get those boots. So we were playing Laois in the semi-final. I'm not sure where it was. And we were beating it by 2 points. We had about, I think it could have been a minute to go or the last puck of the game. They got a free out in the 21 at the sideline. And one of the Laois lads went to take it. And I started shouting at him. I was on the goal. You're going to miss it. You're going to miss it. You know, just before sledging or any of that. And that was our sledging back there. So the referee thought it was David Hershey. David Hershey was on goal. And the referee thought it was him. So he brought David Hershey out from the goal, start booking him. There was no yellow cards or red cards back then. So start booking him. So everyone on the sideline was giving out about David Hershey. What did the referee do? He brought the free from the sideline straight in front of the goal. Crazy stuff. What did the Laois lad do then? Put the ball down, buried in the top corner. Laois bet as we were going home without no boots. And then, David Hershey didn't talk to me for 3 years. So that was my good stories. It wasn't always good news when we played Galway.
Yeah, Tommy's an absolute tonic. Ger, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Flying it. Leon?
Good. Yeah. Very well. I'm very well, thank you.
We'll get straight into this Kilkenny-Wexford game. What's the odds?
Yeah, look, Kilkenny are strong favourites. They're 3-1 on. Wexford are 3-1 and the draw is at 10-1. I just heard the back end of your chat there with Dave, and I don't know what Davey Fitz is at. Maybe he's just putting out that to everyone else outside the camp, and inside he's riling them up. But I don't know. I think Kilkenny, this is a huge game for Kilkenny. They were bullied by Galway. It was men against boys. And you don't often say that about a Kilkenny team, but I fancy Kilkenny. I think they'll win. The line has moved from -3. It's now -4. So people are backing Kilkenny. I think they're expecting a big performance from the Cats. And I think it's a performance that they really need. If they're going to have any aspirations of being serious contenders.
Are you backing Kilkenny on the fact that it's Kilkenny as opposed to the evidence of what we've seen this year? Because I couldn't put any money on 3-1 on. I'd be like,
no way.
No, I'm just scared of that. Yeah. Do you know, like, yeah. And I understand the tradition and all that stuff, but like, at some point, that team is finished. And it might have been 18 months ago.
Yeah, I just think, like, looking at the Galway Kilkenny game and looking at the Wexford Galway game, I thought Kilkenny made a better fist of it. Against Galway.
I thought they were both humiliated. Like,
both, yeah.
You know, not necessarily scoreline, but over the course of the game,
yeah.
It was kind of just being held at arm's length like a little bold child.
Scrappy-doo.
What's the spread?
Kenny have had the extra week off. Maybe that'll help them.
Spread 4 points.
It's 4 points now.
I'd be going Wexford +4 there. No problem.
21-20. Yeah, I think better than evens.
Last week I felt definitely Wexford were going to cover the spread, and they did with something to spare. But I think, like, Wexford have been poor against Kilkenny in the last, especially in the league quarter final. They didn't score from play in the first half. That was absolutely.
See, they had that in them as well. Like, how do you trust Wexford in this circumstances?
Yeah.
So we don't trust either team.
Too many question marks. Yeah, it's a tough punting match now. In fairness, yeah, an awful lot of question marks.
The over's 48.5. I think there's going to be a lot of scores. Like, having said that, I am kind of, you know, looking at Kilkenny's scoreline against Galway. They didn't really score for a long period of that game. You just made the point that Wexford didn't score much in that one either. But it will be one of those games, won't it, where there'll be like porous defences, not much pressure on, no?
I don't know. I think Wexford will try and tie down TJ. They saw the kind of blueprint of what Galway did. Yeah, I'd imagine Liam Ryan would pick up Wally and go wherever he goes. I'd say under 48.5.
Right, okay,
there
you go.
An interesting opinions. A draw would suffice for Wexford to get through to the Leinster final as well, because they're +17 while Kilkenny are +3.
Without being smart, I'd say a draw is probably the best bet. When you can't really pick between the two and you're not sure, I think, what are we looking at? About
10-1.
10-1, yeah.
10-1 for the draw.
And we've been having plenty of them.
Yeah,
we have. The point that like a euro in each game to draw last week would have returned plenty of money for you.
I had Limerick +1, and I think one of you corrected me saying that go for the draw there. And
that was Leon.
Galway Dublin, I mean, it's really hard to preview that one because we don't know what sort of teams are going to be out there.
It is. Like, Ger and I were just having a conversation outside, and I think maybe something has to be looked at here because, like, if Dublin beat Galway, they've got 4 points, and their point plus and point minus would probably be
the differential.
So I understand the head to head, but I think if you're asking like any team to go down now and face the All Ireland champions in their own backyard with nothing on the line, okay, maybe there is something. Maybe they want to go off on their summer holidays and realise that they've beat Galway, so they've something to build on for next year. I fancy Dublin plus seven anyway. I think it's a big head start. I know Galway are going to make changes. They have a great squad. Lads are going to want to try and prove the point when they get their opportunity that they should be starting. But I think Dublin plus seven, I've no doubt in Pat Gilroy that he'll have them fired up for this game. It is their last game of the summer. And I just think plus seven is a big, big head start.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think 5-1 for Dublin to win is a decent bet if there's going to be a lot. You don't know, like, this is the sort of thing, if you're in Pearse Stadium and you see the two teams, the actual two teams that line up 15 minutes beforehand, this could be a chance to hit your boys and have a bit of inside information. Yeah. But I think until then, I think it would be difficult to make a judgment. I'd imagine Dublin would go with pretty strong.
Yeah, I'd say
Galway,
so.
Canning probably won't be playing, and maybe a couple more.
So. We've obviously, one question on this. We've obviously, the whole hurling fraternity has been obsessed with the fact that Offaly are going to get relegated, and that's been the main story. But it's the 8th of June, Sunday is the 10th. And on the 10th of June, the Dublin hurlers will have no more activity of any relevance, really, for any of them, at least until the footballers are out, even the club level. Mm. It's kind of ridiculous. Like, how do Dublin improve? How do the weaker teams in Leinster improve if they're not getting good games in the height of summer?
The system is
great for early season. Let's put the game on steroids and go, oh, this is amazing. The Munster Championship is the best sports event in the world of course. A 4-week period. And then it's over. And then that's the end of it. Like, and so when Clare and Waterford go out, or if it is Clare and Waterford, or whoever it is goes out of Munster, they're kicking their heels in peak summer, watching football take over for 3 months.
Nobody wants football to take over.
I mean,
like the Dublin, like, because Dublin is a dual county, like, that doesn't help the club hurling, because obviously they have to wait because there are a few footballers involved in the club hurling. But like, there's a 4.5 month wait before the second group game in the Dublin Club Championship in hurling until the next one.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are actually already, like, quarter of the teams are already out.
Yeah.
So they're waiting four and a half months for a dead rubber.
How do you grow the game properly?
You don't, and that's the problem.
Yeah, whatever about Offaly. Offaly are a good bit weaker. Let's call a spade a spade. Dublin are very competitive.
Yeah.
And they're gone.
Yeah.
Very early.
It's training in the summer, you know?
Yeah, but I suppose if you look at it, they've got to look back at themselves. And they've got to look at that Kilkenny game where they blew it. So, you know, look, they knew that this was the setup before they went into it. So you have no qualms, but I think maybe it's something that needs to be revisited, certainly.
I think Galway are going to clear the handicap there again as well. I just think they're machines. They'll be bringing in Niall Burke. They'll be bringing in Jason Flynn. They're not going to be weakened at all, I'd say.
But are they actually going to care that much? Like, how do you get everybody to say...
Lads battling to keep their place on the team. I think the likes of Johnny Cohn and Joseph Cooney are going to be looking over their shoulders thinking, can I keep my place in this team? Because they haven't been shooting the lights out in the last
couple
of games.
Imagine if you're management and one of those lads goes down with a cruise shoot because they're busting their balls to try and beat Dublin in a dead rubber. Like, honestly, is there not a point where you think... we're going to actually train like a training week this week, and our preparation for the Leinster final started last week. We rejigged things and went, look, this is a challenge effectively for us.
Yeah, but there might be an element to that, but at the same time, maybe you want to keep your players sharp and get them more used to playing with each other, you know, as often as you can against good quality opposition. Moving on to the next game, Limerick against Waterford, first championship meeting since 2011. What's the spread, first of all?
Well, it's a tricky...
I'm always interested in
the spread. Well, the spread is 2.
For Limerick?
Yeah. So Limerick minus 2 or 10 to 11, Waterford plus 2 or 11 to 10. Limerick are coming into this game with a different tag. They're now favourites.
Mm.
And that does bring extra pressure. And lads know they're favourites, you know. So it's a big game. I was very impressed with Waterford last week with the amount of players that were missing. I thought they put in an unbelievable performance. We actually paid out on Waterford as winners.
Did you?
Yeah, because it was a farcical decision. They should have been winners. It was a ridiculous decision.
Clearly over the line.
So we paid out on Waterford, and I think we'll be paying out on Waterford if anyone backs them plus 2. Really? I think Waterford are going to have a right rattle at Limerick. I think this is going to be a great game. I'm going Waterford plus 2. They're 7-4 to win the game. Limerick are 4-7. I think Waterford plus the 2 points could do a bit of damage.
Sure.
You were saying that they couldn't play Austin Gleeson in the defence because they had no one up front to win their own ball, and then turns out Devine can win his own ball.
Yeah.
Why is he Devine, not Devine? His club name is
Medeligo.
Medeligo, yeah. Why is it Tommy Welch and not Tommy Walsh?
Well, because he picked it. I haven't heard Devine instead of Devine. But I didn't realise he was that good, to be honest. Mm.
Divine actually, intervention doesn't sound as well, though,
no,
does it?
No, it doesn't. The headline writers are like, we're just going to change that.
But I think it'd be interesting. It is interesting that the two ball winners from last year in the forward line, Brick and Gleeson, both went into the backs. Yeah. You know, needs must, and they put a few younger guys up in the forward line.
They could probably do it. They can Brick back in the forwards. Like at this stage of his career, it's hard for him to match up against the pace of the younger lads who he's up against. There's definitely periods where he gets a bit exposed.
Just he actually got Dan McCormack was doing very well in him, and then Brick obviously ended up being the sweeper, and he got on a lot of ball at that stage.
Dan's substitution was interesting.
Oh, Dan's substitution was no.
He won a free just before that and was under best players.
Yeah, and he was one of the few. Like one of the biggest problems with Tip is not enough players run at their man, and maybe that's because Tip don't have enough pace. But Dan McCormack, and people will say that he's from my hometown and all that kind of stuff, but he has savage pace. He was running at the opposition team. He was winning frees. Now I understood taking off the two McGraths to some degree because they weren't in the game, but this lad was actually in the game. But back to Waterford again. I think Limerick will clear the handicap here.
They're coming and that this is them.
They've been so relentless all year. I think their game plan is really good. They protect the defence really well. They've got good forwards up front and they always find them in space. They've got the hardest working forward. They've got three Dan McCormacks in the half forward line with Grod Hegarty.
I thought you were going to say like the commitment's the hardest working band.
And who was the third guy that was in the wing forward line? Yeah, Tom Morrissey as well. Yeah. I don't know, there's just something about them. They don't have Aaron Gallan this week, but you know they've got Pat Ryan to choose from, and I know he missed the goal, but I've seen him with UL this year. He's a real class act.
I'm looking forward to seeing them, how they handle this favourite tag.
Yeah.
I am. I just want to see their...
That's a very fair point.
You know, I want to see their attitude now, because they've been coming in, underdog, get out there, have a go. This is different. Let's see.
What are the permutations for Limerick? Do they have to win?
One draw, one win. Draw would leave them in decent shape.
It is dependent on results as well.
And but Waterford have to win. Waterford
have to win, don't they? Yeah.
There's 81 permutations apparently. So
right, okay.
Yeah, which
I fancy a draw on this one, by the way. I think it's going to be a really intriguing tactical battle around that middle third.
Don't fancy
about
a draw, you know.
Yeah, the next one, yeah. Don't
Tip against Clare.
Yeah.
Tip's confidence is in their boots. Are they going to win this game?
I don't think so, no.
No.
I think the way the personnel that Clare have and the speed that they have, particularly from 8 to 15, I think is tailor-made for a Tip side that looks low in confidence and low in legs at the moment.
Yeah, Clare haven't won a Munster title in 20 years. They've done nothing outside of the 2013 All-Ireland for many, many's a donkey's year. What are the odds there?
It's 2 point again. Tip are 6-4 on favourites. Clare are 6-4 against. The draw here is a little bit less. It's 9-1. I'm going Clare.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think your point earlier, Tom, with Tipperary's legs, Clare have got plenty of legs. And
week off as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
That
was a tough game for Tip last week.
If Tip could actually finally get in front, because they've been behind, they've only led for 14 of their last 244 minutes. It's constantly a Benny Hill type chase after the team they're playing against. And I think if Tip could get out in front, they've clearly got better hurlers than Clare. I mean, Clare are very good, but I don't rate them as an All-Ireland challenger. Sure.
I mean, it's fair enough not to write them as an All-Ireland challenger because they haven't been since they won it. But it just, the Tipperary performance is one of the greatest enigmas that I've seen in sports. When it felt like they turned the corner that second half of the first game that they drew, but then not to have learned any of the lessons or not to have come out, not to have carried any sense of momentum through from that was like, why did you just do the same thing again? But I, you would have to say that. Ford obviously top scorer in the championship, as we all know, so far. And Callan looked like there was one move in the first half last week where they carved open the opposition and a brilliant save from the goalkeeper. Save, yeah. You kind of feel like if that goes in, then suddenly everybody goes, we are at it. But it didn't, and the confidence was so fragile. So I think Tip are going to click in this game and beat Clare.
I'm worried for Tip again, so I'm definitely not sticking my neck out here. Leon, what football games do you want to look at?
We were looking at Meath against Tyrone. I think this could be... Meath were terrible in their defeat in Leinster, but I think at home in Navan, Tyrone have got huge problems. I think there's massive issues in the camp. And I think Meath, I wouldn't back them straight at 130, but I'd back them plus 4 at 10 to 11 at home. I think they're capable of putting up a serious performance against Tyrone. I mean, you only have to look at Tyrone, like if it was a horse race and you look at how bad Monaghan were against Fermanagh, you'd be thinking Meath have got a huge chance here, and they're at home now. I'm sure some people will look at 130 and go, that's a big price at home.
I don't know, like, Meath lost to Longford.
They did.
They're not pulling up trees here.
No, they're not. No, you've kind of two sides that seem to be in a bit of turmoil at the moment, don't you? Like, yeah. Peter Canavan in our paper today was the latest one to say about Sean Kavanagh, how he should have
spoke a bit more when he was
captain or whatever. Yeah. I still think Tyrone will have a bit too much for them.
Yeah,
a bit, but you could see this being one of those qualifiers where Meath get out, score a couple of early goals, Tyrone peg them back and kick a late winner by a point, and you're like, happy days, I'm taking the 4 points of Meath.
Yeah, I think 4 points is a decent start. Leash against Carlow in the semi-final of Leinster. I give Carlow a big chance here.
Yeah, why are Carlow, like...
I suppose it's, look, I mean, the last time they played in the league, wasn't it?
In the league final.
In Crow Park as well, yeah.
They were a very bad first half,
yeah.
Carlow, and they never really gave themselves a chance of winning that. But I think they'll have learned from that. Actually, the lad who's gone to America...
Brendan Murphy.
Yeah, I think that's a blessing in disguise for Carlow, because he's a fabulous footballer, but he seemed to want the ball all the time.
Patrick Ewing theory.
Yeah, and it kind of slowed them down a little bit. I think Carlow now are coming in here as underdog at 7-4. I'd be having a cut of Carlow.
There's a good story from 23 years ago about these two teams.
So Go on.
They played in a Leinster quarterfinal, I think it was. And late on in the game, Carlow, a Leash substitute, I can't remember his name, but he had a shot for a point. It clearly went wide, but the point was given, and Leash ended up winning the game. That night was the first time in the Sunday game that video analysis really came to the fore, and they highlighted and showed it several times that the ball
disappeared
down the outside of the post, so it was clearly white.
It was a replay, was there?
So are you telling the story?
Sorry, yeah.
Any chance? So Carlow ended up going to Timahoe that night, went on the beer. Next day, they're on the beer again, and Bobby Miller, who was their manager and formerly played for Leeds, he comes in and says, lads, we have a replay. And they're all there going... Huh? So they ended up getting a replay the next Sunday, and they went 5 points ahead at one stage, but they ended up losing.
The beer kicked in then, did it?
Sure, look, the old pints didn't stand to it.
No, it didn't stand.
They hardly were. What's the handicap on this one?
It's two points, like
for Leash.
Yeah. Leash rate the 13 favourite. Carlow plus two is 5-6, but I'd be taking a little bit of a chance at 7-4. The second game on Sunday, I thought the line would have been a bit more. Dublin minus 17. I think they'll be able to cover that. At 10-11, and I think Fenton is getting forward a lot more. He's putting himself in goal scoring opportunities, so I think for him at 14-1 to score the first goal, and of course our offer a goal inside 10 minutes, I would certainly be thinking there might be a goal inside 10 minutes here. We will pay double in all markets, so I'd be looking at the Dubs to cover, Ger, minus 17.
I think that's like Longford are talking about not going man to man and not changing their style just for the Dubs. Like, well, lads, you know, you get what you deserve at that point. This could be 6-24 or 6-30. You know, this is one of those games.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, Jack Sheedy set them up as man for man a couple of years ago in 2015. They lost by 27 points. Who wants story time again? I've got another little fact. Here we go. So 2 years ago, a guy who started wing forward for Longford is Ross McNerney. He is now in the band Brave Giant. So he's had to retire from... He's only 23. He's hung up the boots, even from club football, because he's in a band. I think that's pretty cool. But also, late on in that game, there was a three-man clash between Ross McNerney, my housemate Porrick Gill, and Darren Daly. And they ended up absolutely smashing each other. The game stopped for about 10 minutes. Ross McNerney had to be stretchered off with concussion, and his poor mother watching on the telly. I interviewed him this week, by the way. Whereas Park Gill had to ice his balls for about 10 minutes. And he continued on.
Oh,
as Ross says, I still think there's some of them out on the field. So anyway, yeah, Dublin to cover the handicap. Yeah. So are we looking at any other games?
Derry against Kildare. Derry are 11-10. I don't know why they're not favourites for that match. They're at home.
Division 4 Derry for 2019?
Yeah, but like, you know, they're not really a Division 4 team. We know that they have the talent, and I just think that the Kildare confidence levels are so low that, like, I give them a really good shout in that one.
I'll tell you what's interesting, actually. Derry are playing the semi-final at Christie Ring this weekend.
The day after.
So
all the hurlers.
Yeah, whether Chrissy McCaig or those guys.
Chrissy McCaig and Brendan Rodgers are like, they both played last weekend. Or Rodgers was on the bench, but Chrissy McCaig played. So
that'd be hurling. So whether or not they pick the hurling, that would change things.
Well, the football is first.
I'm gonna keep myself in hurling.
Yeah. Well, that would be very interesting too. Your most high profile players, like Brendan Rodgers, is a brilliant player. So
it's a game I wouldn't be really.
I would wait until I'd wait and find out.
Evans Kildare.
As a Kildare manager, Are you fairly sickened with how things have gone backwards? Because they looked quite good in the Leinster final last year before losing to Dublin by 7, was it?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make that much sense. Like, because they were... So Tyrone kicked a late winner against them in the league. There was a couple of matches where, like that where they were right in it until the last couple of minutes and then they weren't cynical enough. And for whatever reason, that has been this kind of cascade of shit ever since. And so, I don't know. Like, it looks like they're on their last legs at the minute. It's definitely one of the situations where if they win and they turn it around, they could get a bit of a run through the qualifiers and get a bit of confidence going. But you can't see where the spark is going to come from.
I think Kildare and Meath, I mean, there's serious issues in both counties.
Mm.
I mean, like it's not for lack of funding.
Mm.
It's not for lack of, you know, anything, facilities anywhere, but they're just falling off their bandwagon.
Yeah,
you know?
It's hard to nail it down. Lads, thanks very much for that. Ger, Leon Blash from Boyle Sports, Michael Verney from...
Kildare against Derry, Christy Ring, 10 to 11 bet of the weekend.
Well, there we go. There we have it. Lads, thanks
good
very
luck
much.
For Kildare.
Thanks very much. You can watch the show back over on offtheball.com. You can listen back to the podcast across offtheball.com as well, or GA on Off The Ball on iTunes. We're back live next Friday at 12:30. I'm going to have Jamie Wall and Derek Honan of Clare, formerly of Clare, they'll be on the show. So lads, thanks very much, and we'll get you all again next week.
GAA on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.